Hello and welcome to the Euractiv Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News Team. This week, the European Parliament vote on their report on the farm-to-fork strategy, and we speak to an organic farmer about her issues in converting to organic production.
This week, there was an important vote at the European Parliament in Strasbourg on the farm-to-fork strategy. It was actually the report, the own initiative report on the Commission's flagship food policy, which is the agri-food part of the European Green Deal, the main policy of this Commission administration.
Own initiative report is one of those jargony things that I've had to wrap my head around since I've been in Brussels.
The real jargon is INI. INI is the abbreviation.
INI, as opposed to an outie.
Yeah, so sometimes you have this conversation with people in the, particularly in the European Parliament. By the way, the European Parliament got extremely prepared and good policy assistance on agriculture. They work for MEPs, they work in the secretariat, and it's really good to have, even when you're trying to get some information and they try to be on a defensive, but still, it's really clear that they are super prepared and actually the future of our food in good hands. Because, they really...
It's a big statement.
and sometimes they tend to use this jargon like, it's a nini.
So INI, yeah. Talk to me, what's an INI? tell me about this INI, this mystery INI.
I don't know exactly the rule of procedure which rule the INI realm, the INI world. But actually, the own initiative, it's mostly for those dossiers in the European Parliament which are some kind or somehow linked with a Commission strategy, because we know that the main source of laws in the EU are regulation and directive. And for regulation and directive, there's the ordinary legislative procedure, so it requires the both amendments from the Council, so the Member State, and European Parliament. But it's true that when it comes to political declaration or political strategy, like the Green Deal or the farm-to-fork strategy or the pharmaceutical strategy, these are basically a document in which the Commission express the ambition that they want to fulfill in the next legislative proposal. So they're not really, they're super crucial because in a sense they basically commit the Commission with some kind of targets, requirements.
Well, they at least send a quite clear signal of where they stand on the issue, you know? So like in doing this, they're sending a clear signal of support for the Commission's green ambitions, basically. And even if it's not, you know, legislatively, doesn't carry any weight in that respect.
They're quite political. That's why they're interesting, because of course, for the farm-to-fork strategy, they're going to be like more than 30 directive that need to be revised or approved. Like the, for instance, one of the most important ones is the SUD directive, the sustainable use of pesticide, which will be probably adopted in May. There was the in Strasbourg as well, the Commission presented the work program for 2022 and confirming that the calendar for the SUD directive, which actually was we received a leak in the past weeks, and our readers already know. But so again, the SUD directive, it was part of the farm-to-fork strategy, and actually on the revision of the SUD directive, the parliament, both the parliament and the council, could actually amend the legislative text proposed by the Commission. It's not the same for the strategies like the farm-to-fork. So
But that didn't stop an absolute lobbying bonanza. I don't think that's the right word, but I mean, This farm to fork vote, the vote on this report, although it doesn't carry this weight that we're talking about and is just kind of a signal, it did just spark this craze of lobbying, though, from all sides. I mean, it really was like kind of a crux of where all the agri stakeholders came to push their message and get their point across about their views on the future of the farming sector. So there was actually quite a lot of anticipation of this report, and there was a lot of buzz about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, it shows, first of all, and I don't think it's necessarily a good thing, that the current debate on the future of the food systems is polarized, at least in two sides, let's say. It's good because in the end, of course, interests are interests, but in the end, we need a common solution. Also because, I mean, there's a overall interest, you know, of ensuring a fair transition to sustainable food systems. But I have to admit, I rarely seen, you know...
This level.
For this kind of vote, for this INI, for this own initiative. Yeah, again, it was a bit of a showdown also because, I mean, the Farm to Fork was presented during the pandemic in May 2020. And yeah, they started, you know, it was criticized by both sides, basically, let's say NGOs or environmental organizations and the industry. But actually, we can say that the real showdown between these two sides happened for this vote at the European Parliament. So it was a bit of a postponement of a clash. The fact that this vote, this report has been approved with barely no amendments was considered as a victory by the Greens and the Green environmental organization, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is what it came down to, didn't it? You're talking about this lobbying. It was very much seen, you know, green groups were seen as they kind of claimed victory over this report. This was like kind of widely celebrated by campaigners as a win, really, for their vision of sustainable farming futures.
Which is true, actually. It's also true that not a lot of amendments passed at a plenary vote on this kind of report normally, because 90% of the work is done at the committee level, and there's not a lot of space in the plenaries for normally, of course. I mean, there are exceptions, but I think that this is my take on this situation.
Your hot take?
Yeah, the real winner of this vote.
Oh, you're about to say something big here. What? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is actually the Commission.
Oh, okay.
The European Commission, because you remember in May 2020 when it was presented this strategy, this farm, the Farm to Fork strategy, the Commission was attacked by both sides. NGOs were saying it's not ambitious, it's not enough ambition. You know, it's basically part of their job to push the Commission of presenting more ambitious targets. And at the same time, the industry criticized the targets. Mm-hmm. But this, you know, this clash between the industry and the green NGOs, so environmental organizations, actually brought the environmental organization defending the Farm to Fork as it was presented by the Commission. So, in a sense, they approved or they like those targets, no? Mm-hmm. So they were brought together by this this enemy, let's say. And at the same time, the narrative of the industry is a bit changed. It's no longer on targets. Now they say, no, we're, of course it's on targets, but it's more on this impact assessment. So they want to be Farm to Fork to be assessed holistically. So basically, the whole the impact of the whole strategy and not of the single measures that are included in the Farm to Fork.
So So this week, we actually spoke with the fairly newly elected president of the Young Farmers Association, that's CEJA. So we spoke with Deanna Lenzi. How was my pronunciation, Gerardo?
Quite
was that
good.
Terrible?
Quite good.
Yeah? Yeah? Yeah, okay. Hopefully that's all right for you, Diana. So we actually spoke with Deanna about her experience in converting her farm to organic. And she has some pretty interesting insights into this. And given the push, the EU's push about organic farming, a very, very interesting interview. Let's see what she has to say. So Diana, welcome to the podcast. Perhaps you could kick us off and just give a little bit of a background about who you are and your work as an organic farmer. What do you farm and where are you?
Hi, Natasha. Yes, of course. So my name is Deanna Lenzi. I am a wine grower and viticulturist from Tuscany. I run since 2008 my family's winery in the hillsides of Siena. It's a We produce Chianti Classico, so very traditional Italian wine. And in 2012, about 4 years into my management, I decided to actually change the way we would farm and convert from conventional farming to organic farming. A big decision that actually in the beginning was just about truly farming. We never certified our wine as organic. We certified that the wine came from organic grapes. Only last year did we certify our cellar and have actually started producing all the way to the end organic wine.
Hmm. So tell me, so you say it was at first a farming decision. Tell me more about what motivated you to convert to organic, and then maybe we can talk a little bit more about the certification afterwards.
So going from conventional farming to organic farming was really an interesting experience. And I spent a lot of time looking at how the vines were reacting, how they were adapting. And I just saw them kind of become more self-resilient, more self-resistant, actually. And it was, I always have this like vision in my head of, especially in the first years, though, when they were struggling a bit, I felt that I was really like asking them to be these kids that since they were born had always been given vitamins and supplements. So they were like strong and but then all of a sudden I took everything away from them and just gave them a raincoat that would actually melt with rain. And in the first years they were, it was quite interesting also because the second year, 2014, was one of the rainiest summers here in Tuscany, and I remember the struggle there in keeping them healthy and making them actually get to harvest in a healthy way. So it's it was a constant adaptation process. Every year we were kind of changing a little bit what we were using, when we were using, understanding what was the better timing. But at this point, really, almost 10 years down the road, I must say it's incredible to see just the healthiness, general healthiness that we have in the vineyard. And also some of the bigger downfalls, which would be productivity, have started slightly mellowing out. Before we used to lose from 30 to 50% of our production. Now I can say maybe we're 20% under average yield.
So it's kind of like that hump when you first initially convert and then you've kind of got to push through it, basically, is what you're saying. I mean, do you think there is enough support given to farmers that are wanting to convert? Because getting over that initial challenge and that initial conversion period must be quite a challenge for farmers.
So let's say on the economic side, in a way, yes, because there is a lot of funding being put in to help economically farmers convert to organic farming. What I think is lacking in a way is actually instead that whole knowledge support system that would be useful, because you just can't go into this without having a true capacity to recognize disease, understand how a different methodology of approaching plant disease will have a different effect, and how, for example, different ways of fertilizing cover crops, how all of how you need to have a much more kind of holistic and integrated system when you farm organically, rather than just kind of have the doctor's recipe that you follow during the year. And so I think maybe I would have liked having even support to hire an agronomic specialist that could have helped us in this. I'm lucky my staff is very prepared and very also was really on board of the idea of doing this transition with me. But of course, it took for all of us some learning, and we had to do it all on our own. So that was something I missed in the transition, would have been to have a little bit more of an integrated knowledge system in place.
The steep learning curve. And I know you said that, you know, there were a few farmers in your region that were all converting at the same time. So I'm just wondering, did you kind of exchange with them? Was that a massive support for you and a help? I assume you're kind of all facing similar issues if you're in the same region.
True. And maybe also because of the way I am and how I approach my fellow farmers, I tend to ask a lot of questions, seek guidance. That's kind of why I became involved in young farmers organizations. So it's my approach is to be very open and very cooperative, but that is not the typical approach of a farmer. Instead, especially a Tuscan farmer, they tend to be a little bit more closed in their niche. And I think that is something that we need to also help kind of surpass as an obstacle, that communication system, the loneliness of the farmer, while instead, if we were to cooperate, to share data, to share information, to share also sometimes technology and systems, the whole territory could benefit from this transition. So I was very lucky because I am in a territory where I am surrounded by very cooperative farmers. If I think that I am part of an association of producers of Chianti Classico, of Castelnuovo Bernardenga, where we really try to work together to promote our denomination and our territory together, it's very rare. But I also see how instead sometimes there's more jealousy towards one's property still. It's a 50-50. So it kind of depends on your life approach.
Yeah. No, it sounds absolutely beautiful where you are. I'm jealous sitting here thinking, you know, hearing about it. It sounds beautiful. And I just wanted to pick up on something that you said towards the beginning of our chat. And you said that initially you weren't certified and then you decided to become certified. And I was wondering why you took the decision initially to not be certified. What were the barriers there for you? And then why you decided actually to go through the certification process and how you found that process? Was it difficult? Was it challenging? You know, does that need to be streamlined?
So in the beginning, we were just certified for our field work. So our grapes were organic till the moment they basically reached our cellar. But we farm everything. We do wines from estate-grown fruit. The problem was the certification, the bureaucracy behind it, the costs behind it, the to me, absolutely unrealistic questions that were being asked and posed to certify us in terms of how we then vinify, the type of product or detergent that I use to wash the floors of my cellar has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that my wines can be organic or not. So when I find bureaucracy that is just is like this conglomerate of messiness and rules that don't make sense, I tend to have a reaction that is just to push away.
Don't we all? Yeah.
But I was, at the same time, I was producing organic wines by all standards. Yet if I were to sell the wine bulk, I couldn't use that type of reasoning. I couldn't just convince people that the wine was organic. They needed a certification that the wine was organic to actually recognize the higher value of organic wines, because there is quite a difference for bulk wine between conventional and organic wines. So in the end, I did have to kind of give in and put my registers all in order on every single detergent we use and write out every time we wash our pumps with what. And we're a small farm. I'm in my cellar. It's myself and my agronomist enologist, and the quantity of paperwork that we have to go through to, first of all, comply to all the rules for Italian wine, and then comply to all the rules for organic farming and wine is just massive. There are really not enough hours in the day. And but because we're small, it's hard to think that you could actually afford someone who could just do the paperwork. And plus, this also has a high cost. Both being certified for the farming and being certified in the cellar has a cost that, of course, then takes away part of that famous added value.
And did you ever consider some kind, I mean, because I've posed this question to the commission before, obviously they're looking to triple the amount of land that's going to be farmed organically. And they've spoken about kind of options for group certification and how that could maybe try and ease the burden. I mean, was that anything that you'd heard of or anything that you considered? Or, you know, do you have any opinions about how that could maybe help ease the burden on farmers?
I'm not sure it would actually ease the burden on farmers. Okay. Because that's at the end, they will always come and ask us, the final deliverer, what we're doing. And so we will always have to fill in that quantity of paperwork. One of my major concerns is the fact that basically I hire somebody to certify me for my organic farming, which basically means at the same time, I am also his boss. And I'm a virtuous farmer, very virtuous. I mean, meaning if there's a rule, I will follow it to the extent but I'm not sure that this is a system that actually can enable virtuous farming, because in the end, if I'm paying you on an hectare base and the more you pay, the more you also have power on this certifying system. So it's a bit tricky in a way. I think we kind of have to relook at the whole certification process. Also, there has to be a lot more coherence, a lot more uniformity throughout Europe. It's absurd that I would have to have my products be recertified in Germany if I were to want to sell the wines by a German certifier. We're all part of the same common market, but yet we can't agree that we all use the same rules. It's absurd.
This week, the AgriFood podcast is produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foot, with the technical support of Evi Chiori. This podcast is also available on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, Amazon, Stitcher, and Spotify.
Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss the latest news from the EU. I'm Natasha Foot. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next week.